You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Josh Nelson joins me, fresh from his ascent to the world's tallest peak with the film Everest. Josh, welcome.
Good afternoon.
That facial hair, you're right. The only thing that's missing is the frostbite and the collapse in the snow.
I actually had the same thought while watching it. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So people may not have seen Touching the Void. They might not have read the John Krakauer book. Just give people the basic setup for the story and before you let us know about the film.
So it's based on true events that took place in, I think, May of 1996. So this is Everest. And the narrative or the film sets out from the beginning that this marks a turning point in the trekking and the climbing of Everest, where now there's private companies who've set up to bring, at great expense, amateur climbers up. And what we get is an image at the beginning of the film of a very crowded base camp, which is already creating some health and safety issues.
Just a little.
And the film focuses primarily on a group led by a Kiwi, Rob Hall, played by Jason Clarke, who decides out of this kind of chaos to team up with an American played by Jake Gyllenhaal, US guy named Scott Fisher. This is a remarkable cast. Yeah. So they tag team to climb the summit, and as you'd probably expect, it goes very pear-shaped.
Let's have a listen to the trailer for Everest.
I'm on the top of Everest, Alan. We made it.
Go to Rob. There is a massive storm headed your way.
Oh, no.
Come on! Get up! That's the wrong way!
There's no oxygen.
You go. I'm down. No, I'm not leaving you behind. Come on.
Okay, that gives you. I'm already getting the heebie-jeebies. I only saw it this morning. Paint a picture, Josh. What's it like watching this film?
It's pretty exhilarating. Mm. This is a real surprise bag. I sort of went in expecting a good cast, maybe a so-so action film, you know, some sort of average scripting, and I was completely won over by this film. I've only just come out of the cinema, so I'm still shaking. It's not quite Mad Max Fury Road adrenaline shaking, but there is an exhilaration, and there's a lovely sense of directorial control where he builds the suspense. You know, I mean, Touching the Void was just this sort of, I mean, I loved the documentary Touching the Void, that protracted sense of, oh God, will this ever end? Mm. There's a similar sensibility here to a degree, but what I like about this film is it manages to strike a balance between sort of archetypal characters. You know, there's the good-natured Kiwi, there's the arrogant Yank, there's the kind of working-class Yank, the pregnant wife at home. These are all sort of stock characters, obviously based on real-life characters. So they're not entirely nuanced in terms of the script, but they're recognisable and the dialogue works and it hits the right emotional beats.
Yes.
Within this broader narrative, which is visually, you know, and sensorially kind of really dramatic.
So, look, I think everything you say is true and it's quite enjoyable. However, I had a few bits and pieces that I couldn't get over and actually stopped me thinking that this movie is greater than the sum of its parts. Firstly, just a stylistic thing, you can tell when they're in a studio.
Yeah, that bugged me too.
And that really bugged me. And it also, Everest is massive. And I've had the privilege of just trekking in Nepal for 2 weeks. And I know it's impossible, having tried to take snaps, that it's impossible to convey the grandeur and, you know, when you feel like an ant surrounded by God. So it's a bit hard to criticize them for that. However, I think what the biggest problem with the film is it's a real story. And they're kind of trying to jimmy a big cast of characters and actually a relatively complex series of events that lead to the expedition, the multiple expeditions falling apart. And you're dealing with a few different causes. So there's simple ego, there's greed, there's commercialism, all of those things coming together. I just got the feeling that they were trying to jimmy in too much. They were trying to capture too much of the true story. And in the end, that ended up being a handicap.
You're probably more familiar with the story than me. Did they take much artistic license? Yeah, I wonder about that, and I haven't been able to sort of track down that information. It felt like these were very convenient plot points, and you know, the pregnant wife at home, and so on.
We haven't done accents yet. We'll get onto accents.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah. But for me, the high points were strong enough to carry me through, and I got quite emotionally invested in this film, and I didn't expect to. Yeah, I did actually.
Yeah,
I didn't expect to. I didn't go into this film thinking this is one that's going to tug at the heartstrings.
Sure.
I thought this was going to be a kind of Fast and the Furious on ice sort of thing. But,
no, it's not that, is it?
No, not that at all.
Some of my favourite actors, Michael Kelly, who plays the Chief of Staff in House of Cards,
yep.
Robin Wright from House of Cards, Josh Brolin, Jake Gyllenhaal, Jason Clarke, tons of good
John
people.
John Hawkes, it's the
Jays. Wonderful, wonderful. However, a huge gaping flaw which I really came out feeling quite pissed off about, to be honest. Number one, there's no Sherpa characters.
Yeah.
Now, these are the, you know, I mean, these are the people who are the backbone of the industry. They're clearly crucial in the plot. They couldn't find, they didn't even find someone who looked like they came from Nepal to play a Sherpa, let alone, surely there's enough of the Nepalese mini Bollywood industry for them to find someone who can act decently. And I thought that actually went to the heart of the question that it didn't answer. I felt like you're actually watching greedy, selfish, egotistical people. Now, I'm not a mountain climber, but there's, and I know this book doesn't address that, or at least I don't think it does. I haven't read John Krakauer's original book. There's something kind of nuts and intensely selfish about wanting to pay $60,000 to get to the top of the world. And I just felt the shining example of that was the people who are crucial to it, who just happen not to be white, are never on screen on their own. They are always appendages. And I thought that was a flaw. Even though, despite all that, it's an enjoyable film.
Yeah, no, that thought struck me as well, particularly in light of going back to Tenzing Norgay and the fact that he hasn't been given the credit that he deserves, you know, throughout history. And there's been a focus on this for quite some time, that Sherpas aren't getting the recognition that they deserve.
Yeah, it's not like it's a new
issue. And the film doesn't try and address that in any real way. I mean, it's almost window dressing. The characters are removed to the sides. The only token character, really, in terms of racial ethnicities and so on, is the Japanese character, the Japanese female. The one woman who climbs Everest is the one sort of on the outskirts. It's not even the Sherpas. So that's, that played into my mind as well. There was an incredible documentary, apparently, I haven't seen it, but it had rave reviews, at MIF, called Sherpa, which was all about this and the credit due Sherpas and the treatment of them. I think it's going to get a theatrical release, and I think it would make a nice companion piece to this film.
More to say on accents. Snow films, though. Stephen's called from Parkdale. Stephen, what's your film?
It's Gulag.
Ooh, what's that?
It's a film with Malcolm McDowell, and I think it might have been Jeff Bridges. I'm not sure. It was an American actor.
Right.
But it was about, he was accused of spying. He was an athlete in Russia for some games, and he got accused of spying, and he got sent to a gulag. And the
film was called Gulag?
It was called Gulag, yeah, and it was the first incident I saw, because I've read Solzhenitsyn and whatever, right?
Yeah.
They planned this escape, which built a false wall and a train and whatever, right?
Okay. I don't think it's called Gulag, because I'm Googling it now. Okay, go again, tell us what happens.
Okay, so, but they have to decide which fat prisoner they're going to take with them.
Oh, of course, okay. Yeah, no, I'm getting 1985. Does that sound familiar? Malcolm McDowell, David Keith, directed by someone called
Roger Young. Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
Right. Okay, is it good?
Oh, it's a great film.
Okay, look, I have to put that one on the pile. Wendy's called from Gembrook. Wendy, what's your snow film?
My snow film's Dr. Zhivago.
Oh, okay.
And it's not only for the snow, although seeing the white snow and the train travelling through is brilliant, but it's the indoor house scenes.
Why that scene?
Just because it's not your typical indoor of a house. There's snow crystals, there's the whole area covered in a layer of this beautiful white snow.
Okay, I have to put that one on the list as well. I want to read some of your texts. Snowpiercer, it's got snow, trains, and end of world class war. What's not to love? And someone texting in to say that the John Krakauer book, Michael Kelly, the chief of staff, Doug Liman in House of Cards, he plays the John Krakauer character, the reporter who ended up writing the book that gave us Rob Hall's story. The book definitely shows greedy, selfish Westerners. It's really worth a read. It's very critical of the people involved. And another great text of a film that I know Josh loved and I haven't seen yet, Force Majeure, which my texter saw at MIF. An avalanche comes rumbling towards Thomas and his family in the middle of a skiing holiday. He follows his first instinct and runs away. Yes, that's from Wayne in Oakleys. That's a great snow film.
Yeah, that was really impressive.
And Wendy's got a snow film. What's yours?
Fargo, the Coen Brothers Fargo.
Gold. Absolutely. Gold. Yeah. I think that's probably my favourite snow film.
Oh, I don't think you can get past those footsteps sort of going across the snow and...
I was going to mention power tools and sort of bodily fluids.
Yeah, mulches. I've got a thing about mulches.
Ugh, gruesome. And every parent's favourite snow movie, Frozen, from Shelley. Oh, ouch.
Let it go!
Oh, no. Wow, that hurts. A quick word on accent, especially Emily Watson, who, of course, fantastic actor. She's in charge of base camp. And Keira Knightley, as the wife of the New Zealander, the one of the central characters, What did you make? Because they're both supposed to be Kiwis, which is a tough accent for even for an Aussie. What do you think?
Yeah, it was jarring to begin with, but strangely, I felt like they had almost nailed it by the end.
Yeah.
Or maybe I just kind of attuned to it. It's always that strange thing with seeing foreigners do Australian / Kiwi accents, is that are you aware of it because you're so used to them speaking with sort of British accent, or is it just because, you know, they're not nailing it?
But actually, and one point about that, often when we get Kiwis on the show, especially those who are media, and they often have a broader Kiwi accent, you get an instant response on the text. So I think there's something about a Kiwi accent that is quite jarring to Australian ears. So it was quite hard. I was thinking the same thing, especially with Keira Knightley. Is she doing this well or not? And I couldn't actually quite tell.
But Jason Clarke's more subtle. You know, they've both gone for quite extreme Kiwi accents.
Fantastic.
And he's far more
Aussie, so it's easier.
Well, he actually said it was almost difficult because, I saw him interviewed earlier this week and he was talking about it, reminding himself.
He's been in some big films. He was in the Terminator film. He was in Zero Dark Thirty. He's doing well.
Yeah, I watched Zero Dark Thirty again the other night, actually. He really stands out.
He's fantastic. Look, we're talking about Everest, so I'm interested in your snow films, 1300-222-774. Oh, KV's got Empire Strikes Back. Bam, I like that. But any other film you'd like care to mention with snow in it, 1300-222-774. Just before we get on to the next one, Josh, you'd recommend people see Everest? Good film.
And if they're going to see it, you have to see it in the cinema.
Definitely.
This is a film that rewards a big screen.
Yeah, you wouldn't
treatment.
Want to watch this on DVD.
I think it would
lose
a lot on a small screen. Absolutely. But did you see it in 3D?
No, I didn't bother.
Yeah, I did.
And?
I didn't really notice it.
I've given up on 3D.
Yeah, fair enough.
I actually saw Mad Max Fury Road in 3D and 2D within a few days of each other. No difference.
Yeah.
But, mate, that's because we're old and boring. David's call from Frankston. What's your snow film, David?
Runaway Train. Possibly the second worst movie ever. But
no, it's a great film.
I'm still cold just thinking about it.
Yeah, but it's a really good bad film.
It's okay. You're so bad, it's good.
You're paid 100%. Look, we've got a little bit of Fargo as well. I think I'm gonna go with that as my favourite snow film.
You want your own wife kidnapped?
Her dad, he's real well off.
So why don't you just ask him for the money?
See, these are personal matters.
Personal matters?
Wait, it's Jerry. I don't know what to do. It's my wife. We gotta talk. It's something for geez. It's terrible.
There's a high-speed pursuit, we got a shooting, and then this execution-type deal.
$1 million is a lot of damn money. They got my daughter.
Why is it, hon?
Grab you some lunch, Margie. What are those, night crawlers?
Oh, yeah, looks pretty good.
That just brings me lots of joy. And Rebecca has called from Altona. Rebecca, what's your snow film?
Alive.
Yes, describe Alive.
Soccer players and others get a plane comes down over the Andes.
And
the dilemma is, do we start eating each other or not just to stay alive?
Stay on the line. Listen to this. I think we've got a little snippet of the film. Ethan Hawke from Memory. Have a listen.
That's because you had no food. Now, if the search has been called off, then we're on our own to save our lives, and we've got to eat.
What?
I can't believe what I'm hearing. You too, Roberta? You're talking about eating people.
No, we're talking about eating meat so that we don't die.
What's going to become of our innocence if we survive as cannibals?
Ooh, I liked it Alive. I don't know if it's still... I've seen it recently, Josh?
No, not in a long while.
Oh, thank you. That's a great suggestion.
You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Josh Nelson is with me. We're talking about Everest in a moment. We'll get into Duke of Burgundy, which is, I'm not sure if it's got broad appeal or not. Anthony's called from Port Melbourne with a snow film. What is it?
One of mine's Apocalypse Snow. It's an 80s or late 80s, I think, ski film. And it's so schlocky. It's a bit of a cult classic.
Is it like a spoof of Apocalypse Now or not?
No, it's just guys skiing powder snow with a basic storyline, guys in gorilla suits snowboarding after the hero.
Oh, okay. But so it's not a Warren Miller film. It's kind of like a feature.
Like that, but there's sort of a story, I think, but it's
And just
also, James Bond, A View to a Kill, he ripped the ski off of a snowmobile and snowboarded down in the opening scenes.
I think there's a few James Bond films with snow, actually. Look, good. Apocalypse Snow. I'm not so sure I'm going to add that to my list. Duke of Burgundy. Now, could get into subject matter that not everybody's comfortable with talking about with your average 6 or 7 year old, although you could be totally comfortable with it, but just a little word of warning there. Josh, what is Duke of Burgundy before we play a bit of the trailer?
This is a film by English director Peter Strickland, and it's a little hard to describe. It basically focuses on a relationship between two women in a European sort of rural setting who are engaged in a kind of S&M relationship, which automatically throws up red flags and people think, oh, that's going to be explicit. It's actually very not an explicit film at all, but it explores their relationship, but in the context of this all-female community who are all...
All-female community?
All-female community, okay. And they're all lepidopterists. I think I got that right.
What's a lepidopterist?
Lepidopterists are people who study Lepidoptera, which are moths and butterflies. So this is strange. So it cuts between these sort of academic lectures where they're all talking about these moths and these butterflies and these two women who are in this sort of strange master-slave power dynamic, which then starts to change before our eyes and we see the relationship start to evolve.
So basically like Fast and Furious 7.
Completely like Fast and Furious 7.
Let's just have a little listen. I think this is the lead character asking her younger lover to rub her feet.
Where are you going?
I thought I'd finished for the day.
You finish when I say...
There is nothing left to do.
Oh, there's plenty left to do. You can start by rubbing my feet.
May I go to the toilet?
No.
But I
think it's better that you stay by my feet and continue doing what I asked you to do.
So what's this film like?
I think it's extraordinary.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think this is a really extraordinary film. To give the audience an idea of the tone of the film, I think... It reminded me in some ways of Foxcatcher because it's a film where the relationship is everything on the surface. We're presented with these characters and we have to infer what's actually going on, the dynamic, and there's so much sort of simmering underneath the surface. The poster for this is quoting a line from the Times Review, which says, this is the thinking person's 50 Shades of Grey. I think that's pretty ridiculous. This film has nothing in common with 50 Shades of Grey.
So it's much more that sort of, there's a whole lot going on that is never said. Yeah. Foxcatcher vibe.
There's no explicit sexuality in this film. It's all sort of underplayed. Peter Strickland's a master of implied acts. Everything happens behind doors where he uses sound to great effect. And this is a film, I can't think of another film that would exemplify the criteria of the Bechdel test as well as The Duke of Burgundy. This is, you know, it's such a fascinating, and it's so rare to see a film with an exclusively female cast. I mean, he's borrowing a lot of filmmakers and styles from 60s and 70s European filmmakers, like Bergman would be one. But I was, you know, most of the references in the film I was completely oblivious to, and I still thought this was a striking film. And from an academic point of view, I can't think of another film that's represented forms of masochism, particularly female masochism, on screen with as much sophistication or complexity.
Okay. So, Duke of Burgundy, that's on at the Nova. Everest is on kind of pretty much anywhere. Patrick's called from Pascoe Vale with a snow film. Patrick, what's yours?
We're Eagles Dare. It's Richard Burton and Clint Eastwood.
Who else? Yeah. Anyone else famous?
Can't remember.
James Coburn? I can't remember.
Maybe, but yeah, there's plenty of snow in that film. It's
plenty
terrific.
Of snow. And Eddie's called from Port Melbourne. What's yours?
Yeah, Ice Station Zebra. Oh. It's all made in the studio, but it's actually quite cool. And then, and just quickly, I'm a Kiwi. I saw that Everest yesterday.
Oh, yes.
That Watson was quite cringing to listen to.
Oh, so Emily Watson didn't get the Kiwi accent right?
Well, she was like really, really like outback Kiwi.
Massive. Okay. Well,
I tell you what, they really nailed it. That was really, really quite cool. Great film.
Okay, and you thought Keira Knightley's accent was good?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
It was because it really contrasted. But I think what they really got was just the Kiwi feel. They were quite cool in that respect.
Okay, interesting. Great to have that view as well. Thanks for your call. Josh, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.
Josh Nelson, you can find him at filmology.com and on Twitter, @Filmology. Everest is on everywhere. The Duke of Burgundy, which Josh loved, is on at the Nova.